If you're a police officer or currently working in law enforcement and you're considering your career, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Andy Labrum. Welcome to the Blue Light Leavers podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 84 of the Blue Light Leavers podcast. Now, today I'm talking to Paul Rowland. Now, Paul is a former police officer who is now a deputy manager for Unified Care Services. And in this interview, we talk about his policing career. And we also talk about all the key skills that are required for this particular type of work within the care sector. We talk about a day in the life of a manager within the care sector and the type of work that he does. And we talk about some of the challenges and some of the good bits and some of the worst bits of this particular type of career. And we also talk about the potential opportunities as well. And there are loads going on around the Northeast at the moment. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye out. And we signpost the website within the show notes. But there are a lot of opportunities here. And it's an incredibly rewarding job. The salary is good. And there are lots of opportunities here for people with our skill set. So I'll leave it there. Let's go over to Paul now. Hi, Paul. It's fantastic to have you here on the Blue Light Leavers podcast. And thanks ever so much for being talked into doing it. I do appreciate it. It's a really good year. Paul, it'd be great to know a little bit about you. But if you could just tell us first off what it is that you're currently doing.
Okay, so I work with a company, an organization called Unified Care Services, and we provide support and care around predominantly young people. The organization at the moment are working quite a lot in the northeast of England, around Newcastle, in the northeast, Redcar and Cleveland councils as well. And the kind of work that we do is support young people who are and have been previously, in some cases, living in various other forms of supported living, in children's homes or secure children's homes. And it might be where that their family relationship has broken down, and the support network that they've had around them, whether it be adoptive or biological, in terms of their family, they've not been able to remain in a family environment. So they're living with support workers and caregivers effectively. In some cases, the reasons for them requiring that level of care and support is due to learning difficulties, or in some cases, emotional and behavioural difficulties, which is something that I've worked with quite extensively in the last few months with one particular individual that I've been working closely with.
Yeah, amazing. And it'd be good, I think, for our listeners to know what you were doing beforehand and talk a bit about your career previously.
Okay, so I'll wind right back to 2003. I had a 10-year police career that began in 2003. Throughout that time, predominantly I was involved in, I was in firearms, and I spent a couple of years in CID. And within that time in CID, predominantly child sex offences was something that was looked at mostly, and where I worked predominantly in the south of England. I didn't work extensively with youth crime. I didn't work extensively with any normal mainstream coppering, really. So I didn't develop the interest in the police, but I did, I suppose, like any police officer, I did brush upon it, and I did have encounters with youths having committed offences. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't extensive. That wasn't a part of the job I really covered. I left at the end of 2012, beginning of 2013. It was December 31st, 2012. I had an interest in going into the private security industry, and I spent probably around 9.5, 10 years kicking around in the private security industry. And throughout COVID and lockdown, I was introduced to this kind of work. I spent a few months doing this sort of work, and I developed a taste for it then. Mm-hmm. And circumstances didn't allow me to continue on with it for very long because there was a lot going on. I had a normal life to return to, and other work commitments and life's commitments. But as soon as I could, I started to make inquiries about what other organisations were doing this kind of work throughout the UK. And I was introduced to Unified Care Services by a former colleague, actually, not a former police colleague, but somebody who I'd worked with within the security industry. Mm-hmm. And he made the introduction, And I spoke with Martin, who's the managing director.
Yeah.
And things began there in July of last year. And to be perfectly truthful, I haven't looked back. It's been brilliant.
Amazing. And Martin speaks really, really highly of you as well, Paul. It's you're clearly doing a fantastic job. But do you mind just talking about sort of your rationale for leaving and what it was that the drivers behind that and how you felt about that process?
So leaving the job, I looked around me and I think that I say I was very young. I joined at 19, and I was looking at leaving at 29, 30 at that time. There was opportunities at that time outside within the private security industry, which I think many people were sort of seduced into. I wouldn't say that I was at that time. That wasn't the main drive behind me leaving. I had become a little, disenfranchised with what was going on around me. The job had changed, and many of the people joining the job at that stage had changed in that 10-year period. Having spoke to other former colleagues and people, some of them that are still in, some that have done a lot longer than myself, I'd say it's quite identifiable around about between sort of 2003 and 2013. That sort of 10-year period, things have changed quite a lot. So the people involved in policing, their mindset will have changed quite considerably. And it's fair to say on my interview, when I joined, I was asked, what would I like to do within the job? I gave a couple of things I'd like to do. I wouldn't mind, like anybody else joining the job, they have absolutely no idea what they really want to do when they join. Mm-hmm. But I said to them, maybe dog handling, or I wouldn't mind working with children. And they just looked really weird and looked at me and said, okay. And could you elaborate on that? And I discussed sort of possibility of working with children that had been victims of crime. And I hadn't even been something I thought about, to be honest with you. It's something that rolled out of my mouth, mm-hmm. because it wasn't something I thought I'd just say because it felt like the right thing to say either. It was just a thing that came into my head. I wouldn't mind doing that. That would be something that I'd have an interest in. And probably while I was there, actually, at the doing the selection process and going through the recruitment process at the centre, I'd been exposed to things that day, and I'd looked at things which probably piqued my interest, and it sat with me. And it's actually it's thoughts that have sat with me from then onwards, really. And like I say, very little exposure to youth crime or anything like that, which would tie in quite closely, mm-hmm. with a lot of the experiences and the things that we you require a bit of experience and knowledge of youth crime and the sort of exposures to criminality and exploitation that young people actually experience. That the knowledge that you would have from policing and doing that within the job would definitely be an advantage to you in this line of work.
Mm. So let's go through that in a bit more detail, if we can, just some of those key skills and behaviours then that obviously you pick up as cops. And then we'll talk about a day in the life of, if you like, because people will obviously be really interested to know what that looks like as well, and some of the challenges maybe. So, what do you think some of those key skills and behaviours and attributes are?
There's a great deal of empathy required in this role, and a slow approach, methodical approach to everything. We have obviously aims and sort of key achievements we look to set out for the young people that we work with. They're not our aims. They're not our achievements. Mm. Our goal is to assist them and support them in achieving theirs. So if they achieve theirs and they succeed in what they are set out to do, then by virtue of that, we've achieved ours by providing the support that we have. I would say it's almost unmeasurable, and the similarity we have to the policing career is that very often you would, you have nothing, you have no measure, you know, there's no finished article, there's no finished project, there's no wall, there's no, nothing tangible, nothing practical you can look at and say, oh, I've finished that, look at what I've done, there's my work. You don't have that in this job either, necessarily, but you do have at the end of 8 or 9 months, as I've recently had an experience where a young person has now gone into a mainstream form of a children's home, where 8-9 months ago, that young person couldn't remain in there. He'd come from secure, and his behaviors were extremely challenging, very damaging, and dangerous experiences that he had. You know, there'd been a lot of things he'd done during that time, which were very dangerous things, both to himself and other people. And as such, his time spent with us was largely spent reflecting upon some of those experiences and how they might have gone differently. And I suppose an engagement, a supported engagement daily with not only it started with us as a support staff, but then other members of the public, and then slowly back to his adoptive parents and education, and starting to engage within education, starting to build a rapport and actually have a relationship with his social worker to achieve the things he needed to achieve. Like I say, an unmeasurable success in as much as you can't identify what that looked like 9 months ago. You can't even begin to imagine. You are going to have... You're going to have violent encounters. You're going to have experiences which are, to some degree, quite frightening when you think of where they come from. They come from a young person, and there's going to be threats of violence. There's going to be the usual things said and done. And yes, you may have to, at some point, take a step back and evaluate a situation that could be dangerous. But that's not nothing. That's not something you haven't done in the police. You've definitely done that if you've been a police officer. So taking that few moments, that condor moment, as some will call it, and just taking the in look and think, right, how are we going to approach this? And approach it as safely for you and the young person as you can. Remembering that our goal, our aim, is to support that young person in achieving the things right down the line that they need to. And at the beginning of that transaction, if you will, it's not even measurable. You don't know what you're going to set out to achieve. I didn't know eight nine months ago when I came to the company that this young person was going to have made the remarkable improvements in his life that he has. And if you'd have asked me 6 months ago, probably not either.
It's incredible. Yeah, that's going to be so rewarding as well, to make a difference like that is just incredible. So, well done. I know you're probably going to be a bit embarrassed to talk about it, I'm sure, because that's sort of how we're wired. But so I know you got some formal recognition, didn't you, from it, from Newcastle Social Services, didn't you?
There's been a couple of emails fly around and commend not only myself, other members of the team and the other support staff. I think the reason I've probably had a notable mention and one of those and a notable mention within it is because we've worked very closely with him for a long period of time. Where the job has required a lot of resilience and people, it's not to say they're not resilient people. They're just not resilient in that particular way. And everyone has a limit on what they're about to put up with and how they're about to sort of go through things. I mean, it's a lot of pressure. It's a great deal of pressure. Your life has to be put together well. Your life has to be in place, I would think. I say that, and to be honest, you know, talking really personally, in the last 8-9 months, I've gone through death in the family, birth of a child, moving house, serious illness within my family. Many of these things have just at times they've sort of paled into insignificance at times because of the level of crisis that this young person has been in. And that is actually something that I've noticed throughout time, that I've dealt with many of these things. They've been going on in the background. Other people are dealing with these things, and perhaps their situation just isn't quite right for them at that time to do this. And it's fair to say, if I'd have come back into this line of work probably a year, 18 months sooner than I did, with some personal things that I had going on with my own daughter, who many of those experiences, I would say, have lent to me improving my approach and probably adopting a very specific approach at times. Probably I wouldn't have been in the right place to tolerate some of those things and accept some of those things throughout that time either.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that, mate. Thank you for that. And thanks for being so open about it as well. That's really good of you. And I think one of the things that we tend to miss is, and it's always a bit cheesy, but it is what it's all about, is that making a difference. And it's, you know, having a bit of an impact, and it's being part of something bigger. And you know, you've clearly done that, particularly with this young lad. So well done, mate. You should be proud of that. That's fantastic. I know you're part of the team, but yeah, it's a lovely thing to do. And that is one of the key things that we miss. And, you know, I have loads of conversations with people about why they're moving on and what they're looking for in the next role and things like that. And you know, being part of something bigger and making a difference always, pretty much always come up. So well done. Really impressive. Could you talk us through a day in the life of and things like shifts and stuff like that, how that works? And
Absolutely.
So a day in the life of would be really helpful.
So every service will have its own sort of differences. I'll give the rundown on the most recent experience I have. In this particular setting, we work with predominantly travellers, and we would travel in from wherever. I live in Yorkshire, and as I say, the setting was in the northeast. And people would travel from all over the country. That isn't something that was always happening. On some other settings, people will do a day shift and maybe a night shift, sleep in nights and things like that, waking nights. It really depends on the service provision and the number that we have and the rate of staffing ratio. We had a 3-to-1 staffing ratio on that young man. And other services will have a slight difference to that as well. But so we start in the morning, 8 o'clock. So you'd be up bright and breezy, in the shower by 7, getting yourself ready for work effectively by 8 o'clock. The home that you work in, will either be an apartment or a house, bungalow, something maybe provided by the local council, by the local authority, or it might just be a temporary place, as we were in for quite some considerable time. So, you know, your usual daily routines, such as a bit of cleaning. You might have some washing to do. The usual things that you would do with your own family to begin with, and until you wake the young person, they may have education to do. So there might be, it might be an online education. It might be going to a centre that may be several days a week. So getting them up, like as you would your own child, as you would your own teenager, getting them some breakfast, making sure that their clothes and bits and pieces are sorted for them to go to wherever they're going to go to for the day. A bit of administration, obviously, around that, evidencing certain factors of the day, making sure that that everything that you're supposed to be doing is done and documented as well. There may be comments, there may be conversations you have with the young person that you need to document and comment and evidence certain things at certain times. Ensuring that he's fed, watered, and off to school if that's what he's doing, if he's going into some form of education, or that he has the basis of his education. In our case, most recently, that was on a laptop, and that he has his laptop, he has his breakfast, and he has his set out timings for his education if he's doing it from, say, 11 to 1 or something like that. Then he's aware of those timings and have a plan for the afternoon. Once he's finished with his education, you might have a plan to do an activity, or it might be that he's visiting family or friends. You'd run them to the location, wherever that was, if you're doing an activity. You might be supporting them in an activity such as climbing or trampolining in some of the cases of some of the young people, or biking or go-karting. So it might be an outdoor activity. Don't get me wrong, they're not doing that every day. It's expensive. And these things, you know, these things are generally treats for adhering to their program of education and things like that, making sure that they get to do these things in turn with the recognition of the fact that they have to do their education, they have to behave themselves as well. You know, they have to achieve their targets and goals that they set out to achieve. So in recognition of that and support of that, yeah, they do get to do some nice activities. They do get rewards, which we will support them in as well. So the afternoon might be they'll head off and potentially see friends outside of the usual hours of education or whatever they're doing, and then you'll pick them up a little bit later on. You'll keep in contact with them throughout the day. And when you're not with them, you're then doing the other things behind the scenes that are required to provide the provision of support to that young person, which is endless, to be honest with you, because when that young person is not there, that's when you get the opportunity to write your reports. That's when you get the opportunity to do the proper washing and tidying up and things. You are effectively having a home from home. It's almost like having a second family, if you will, but one that you have to document and ensure that everything is all the T's must be crossed and the I's dotted.
Yeah. And how long would you spend away from home potentially?
From home at any one time, I'm usually not home away from home for more than 4 days. Mm-hmm. I work at the moment a 4 day on, 4 day off rotation. And that's through choice. That's my choice. And the company have been able to facilitate and continue with me doing that, which I'm very pleased of. You wouldn't have to if you're working in the location or sort of living in the location of work within the Northeast, if that's where you were, or an area where the company had a service provision, then potentially you could travel in daily, depending on what the work and shift pattern of that service was like at the time.
Mm.
So it's not set in stone because there are a lot of people that come and go daily on different services.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks for that. And this may sound like a pretty obvious question, but I think I want to spell it out. You know, what are some of those challenges? Obviously, some of those behaviors and everything else that, you know, you're going to get. But what have you found some of the most challenging aspects to this, Paul?
It's very... So when someone is, we call it dead weight in the police. If you've got to move someone on and they just go dead weight, and they collapse on the floor, it's a very passive form of not doing what you require them to do at that time, maybe for your safety, public safety. In essence, it's that you need them to do something for them, for themselves.
Mm.
So when someone just completely passively says, no, I'm not doing it, that's one of the worst and one of the most difficult challenges you can experience. Mm. Because the lack of communication, breakdown of communication, if someone just chooses not to communicate at all and says, no, I'm not doing it, that can be one of the hardest things, actually finding a way in, finding a little hole somewhere within that you can start to communicate. Where you can start to find out there's a reason right inside why we're not going to do this. There's a reason right inside why you don't want to go to meet your social worker today. There's a reason you don't want to go and meet your parents. There's a reason you don't want to go to the education place, why you don't want to go to the doctor. So we have to, without being forceful and without going into the realms of starting to re-traumatize, if you will, because very often the reasons why these things aren't being done is because they are as a result of early childhood trauma, something that's gone on in the background that they just really don't want to do today because it reminds them, or there's something that's gone on in the past, it didn't go well last time, something like that. It's starting off a dialogue, starting to pull the thread a little bit and say, right, okay, don't worry about that. Let's go and have some lunch and we'll go off and do something else. And we'll just completely divert from it and bounce off and do something different. It's the revisiting of that, and it's the things that a person then has to do at some later stage. Not that you're looking to force them, but you, as I identified earlier, these are things that they have to do for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So engagement within education, engaging with healthcare professionals, to convince a young person who has said adamantly that they're not going to do it. You don't want to re-traumatize them by looking to force them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you want them to feel as if they have made that informed decision themselves.
Yeah.
And at some stage along the way, you have to have them, or you'd like to have them, recognize that the reason why they're going to engage with those people is in their best interests. So it's turning the corner from, no, I'm not doing it, I'm just stubborn, I'm a stubborn teenager, I'm not going to do it, to, yeah, I'm going to do it because not only does he say it's the right thing for me to do, I recognize it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That challenge there, that the communicative and the building the relationship and having them realize that can be really challenging when it starts out with no, not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
In the face of some of the more challenging things, you know, I'm being really honest, that was a really passive answer. On day two, I had a chair thrown at me. The house got smashed up. People trying to kick through windows, a house being smashed up and completely destroyed, a lovely little house, probably 30 grand's worth of damage in a half hour to an hour. That's happened several times. So yeah, I've moved from one end of the scale there to the other, but the very passive, I don't want to do it, to the whole very dangerous levels of aggression where people are threatening you with household implements. Yes, there's been experiences where people have had weapons held to them, been threatened with violence, off the scale violence as well. The sort of thing that would make anyone's blood boil, actually. It's something that can, it can be scary. It can be quite a frightening experience when you've got a young person that's in such a level of crisis that they are threatening to do something which could potentially end your life. And could result potentially in the end of theirs as well, because of their level of the level of heightenedness at that time. And it's extremely, some of the things that, someone trying to turn the gas on and blow the place up when they're just a bit upset because they've been told they can't go to that place over there. You're not gonna drop them off somewhere, so they're gonna smash the house up and they're gonna engage in practices and do things which purely by misadventure would potentially cause them an injury or cause them harm that could lead to the end of their life and the end of the life of others, and serious harm being caused to others. And at that point, it's fair to say they don't care. They just don't care.
Yeah, they're past that, I guess. But it must be quite difficult because obviously, as a cop, you got spray and baton and taser and all that sort of stuff. You're literally back to your TACCOMS days, aren't you, really? Your tactical communications and sort of backing off if you need to and talking them through it, I'm assuming. Would that be right?
In most cases, absolutely, yeah. And very, very few times in the time I've spent with Unified Care since July last year, have we ever had to do anything that wasn't dealt with just purely by communication. With tactical communication and your effective communication, it's entirely down to approach, how you'll speak, the tone of your voice, all these methods that we've all been using for years and years. Yeah. And I would say it's fair to say, that they're used by teachers in schools, they're used by nurses in hospitals. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that anyone is completely unfamiliar with, but I would say there's tweaking involved in probably most people's approaches when they come into this line of work. Some people are set perfectly for it. I won't say I was set perfectly for it. I'll say I was probably set as damn near perfect for this particularly young person I was working with as I could be. I made some adjustments myself quite early on with him. But I've witnessed and experienced many, many others that I've worked really closely with him and done very well as well. So it's pitching it right. And it's knowing what you're likely to achieve out of it and how open a person is to how sort of susceptible they are to the kind of good practices you're trying to lay around them and good things that you're trying to do for them. They're not always, every young person is different and they've all got different experiences and backgrounds there themselves and traumas that they've faced in their lives. So trying to pitch that level of communication. Yes, you're absolutely right. When somebody is threatening you with a chair or a lump of wood or something like that, you're right. You haven't got the police baton. You haven't got the handcuffs. You haven't got the taser, the spray, or anything otherwise. You don't have that. So what you have is hopefully the relationship that you've built and the level of empathy and the method of association that you can put into place. And on very rare occasions, the police have to be involved. They do. And at that stage, then, you've done all you can at that time for that young person. And the reason the police would be called is because any further communication, any further escalation of that situation by the young person or the support staff would be dangerous for all involved.
Yeah, without a doubt. Thanks for that, mate. That's useful. And yet again, it's all those sort of key skills that we pick up in our policing careers, So certainly ticking a lot of boxes, but... now I know, so Martin had been in touch, Martin Campbell, the managing director of Unified Care Services. He got in touch, obviously, and we had a really good conversation. He's a really lovely guy and you know, doing things for all the right reasons. And I know at time of recording, so this is obviously March 24, at time of recording, there's some vacancies around Middlesbrough, Newcastle and Redcar, Cleveland sort of area. Could you just talk us through the application process, the interview process and how you got through that?
Yeah, of course. So the application process in itself, I was given an email, I was given Martin's email. So this was a few months ago, and I think there probably has been some slight alterations and changes, but I'll give you as close as I can to what I understand to be the current way. You'll receive an application pack. The application pack is an application form. You'll fill that in, and along with that, probably send a copy of your CV and any relevant qualifications and experiences that you have, which I think the kind of role that it is, many, many things can be relevant. I think you could bring something from most walks of life to this. So your CV will have something on it that will be useful. Send that over, and then that'll be screened by the HR and the senior management team. And then you'll be invited for interview from there. The interview will be either in person or on Teams. That's if you're not from the area, probably it'll be done on Teams. If you're quite local, then it'll be you'll head to the head office up in Ledgate and do that. From there, whether you're successful or not, it all depend. You know, like I say, if you're successful at interview, you'll go on to the next screening stage, which will be the DBS, and you require an enhanced DBS for working with young people and adults, because the service provision isn't just for young, it's not just young people, it's adults as well, vulnerable adults. And once that screening process for the DBS has gone through, you'll receive but you have PMVA, which is Prevention and Management of Violence and Aggression. It's a little bit, well, it's similar to officer safety training, elements of unarmed defensive techniques and things like that as such, but elements of, they're quite passive restraints, quite passive. Nothing quite as in-depth as officer safety or personal safety training. I was actually an instructor in the job as well. So there are elements of it which are very very watered down version of what we may have done in the job. So you'll need to do that before going on to onto a team. And you'll also get your induction training. So there's induction training, and that's usually about 3 days worth of going through paperwork and discussing some of the paperwork, the reasons for doing the paperwork, why you record certain things, why you don't. In some cases, certain, you know, things are not recorded in a particular way. As you know, it's your pocket notebook days of things in the past, things like GDPR and things like that. You have a good bit of online training to do that are sent through a portal, and you'll have a couple of days. You'll have a bit of first aid training and medical training and safeguarding with a strong emphasis on safeguarding and really, really and truly understanding safeguarding as well, because a lot of people think they understand safeguarding. It's not until you sit there and try and understand. Yeah, you get it fed to you really. Safeguarding is, it's broad and deep. There's a lot of it. Yeah. And from there, you'll be allocated a service usually. So from start to finish, the process can take, I would say that can vary very much depending on things like your DBS and then the availability of going on training courses. You're probably looking at up to 2 months.
Probably. Yeah, that's not too bad, actually. That's not bad. Other things will be look a lot longer, so that's really impressive. Yeah, that's very good. And I know people are also going to be thinking about salary and whether this is something that they could leave the job for effectively, or whether it's a sort of pension top-up type thing. So without going into detail of what you earn, because I really don't want you to do that, but it'd be good to get an idea on potentially sort of salary banding, or whether it is something that you could leave the job for at certain levels and it would replace your income.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is. In terms of what the contract says and what you're going to earn in terms of what your contract says. It's a little bit like in the job, actually. I don't think I ever earned what the contract said I was going to earn, what my annual pay was going to be. It was always a good amount more.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same as this role as well. Mm-hmm. So it depends on whether everyone comes to the company now as POAE. So everyone's employed, they're on a contract. So they have the stability and assurance of a job, a 40 hour week contract. You can opt out of the 48 hour working directive. Yeah. So you can work a little bit more.
Yeah.
If you want overtime, you can. Certainly on a 4-on-4-off rotation that I currently do with my long days and sleeps, the take home is around about what a top rate sergeant's going to run away with.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
brilliant.
Thanks for that, mate. It's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you for that. And it's like I said, I don't want to sort of put you on the spot and what do you earn? You know, nothing like that. But it was, people will certainly be thinking, if they think this is, you know, the right opportunity for them and it's going to work to their strengths. And, you know, there is obviously a huge amount of reward. And occasional frustration, I'm sure, there's a lot of reward there and you're still making a difference and having an impact. And, you know, if the salary matches as well, then it's a fantastic opportunity. Yeah. I guess, what do you see your future holding, if you like, in you know, in terms of sort of progression or, you know, you're comfortable where you are at the moment and just see how things roll? You know, what's your plan?
It's an interesting question because it's been, I've had the same question asked me recently by directors within the company. I would like to think I have a future with the company, and a couple of things that have been discussed is the organization themselves, as well as many other organizations similarly in the country, are having to obtain accreditations and regulation by Ofsted and other awarding bodies, CQC for the care side of things.
Yeah.
Along with that, there are expectations of a standard, like there would be any level of accreditation. So becoming qualified and trained and more aware and knowledgeable of those standards and what's expected of an organization to implement those standards and maintain them. Along with that comes an opportunity to learn, develop, and become part of the organization and their assurance, I suppose, in making sure that works, holds together. I'm an experienced manager. I've been managing for years. I'm currently in a role of a deputy manager within the company, and very much so. I'm sort of managing the day-to-day elements and aspects of a setting. However, that being done to an accredited standard, there will be very specific requirements that are different from right now, and there's things I'll have to learn, there's things I'll have to develop and experience over time to ensure that those standards are met, and that's something that I'm quite open to the idea of doing. So I know what the question is asked for, and I know the answer I'm giving is basically as career development. There is career development within
there is role. Opportunity
there is opportunities to grow, and I would say specialize in areas of the industry as well, and certainly within the organization. I probably have a better understanding than most of EBD, the emotional behavioral difficulties. I have a really good understanding of a lot of the things that happen around young people with that problem. On the other hand, I'm now moving into a setting where I'm going to be working for a few months with a young man with learning difficulties. He's actually a young adult. And I consider that to be a really new challenge and something I'm quite keen and excited to get involved in. So again, with that, new challenges and opportunities to experience new things, which again can only add to your employability in the future and can only add to your levels of experience that you're getting.
Absolutely.
So new opportunities and great, exciting new opportunities. And I'm not being paid to say this either.
Absolutely.
From the heart, it's great. It's great new opportunities.
Well done, mate. But I'm really pleased that things are working out so well for you, and that, you know, you really are still having such a big impact. And And you're getting rewarded for it as well, which is great. The possibility of progression as well. And so, yeah, I'm really pleased. And thanks so much for your time, mate. It's very, very good of you. Thanks, Paul.
No problem at all. Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it.
No, not at all. Thank you. And if there are, I don't know if you're on LinkedIn, but if people want to connect with you, can they do that?
Yes, yeah. I'm Paul R. Unified Care Services is the organization that I'm with. Yes, absolutely. People can contact me on LinkedIn.
No problem. Yeah, great stuff. And what's your job title, your official job title that's sort of showing?
I'm a deputy manager, but overall, I'm a support worker. I'm deputy manager of the support team around the young person, but the role is that of a support worker.
Yeah.
It's very broad. It's a very broad title that's used, sometimes misused, but not in this walk. This is definitely it's care and support. As a support worker, you'll experience a lot of different things.
Yeah, great stuff. Thanks, Paul. And so there are, time of recording, there are some vacancies available. So if people are interested, they can contact Martin Campbell, and it's Martin with a Y. So MARTYN at unifiedcareservices.org. That's Martin with a Y at unifiedcareservices.org. If it's something you're interested in, express an interest direct to Martin, the MD. So, Paul, thanks so much for your time, mate. Great to see you.
No problem,
and I look forward to catching up again soon.
Cheers now. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode, and what a lovely guy, and he's just doing some amazing things, and a real success story. And as I said, with our skill set, the sort of work that we've done previously, and there's some flexibility as well, and you're still making an impact, which is what it's all about for us, is being part of something bigger and still being able to influence and have an impact, but use all those skills and the experience that we've picked up within policing. So as I always say, if you like what you've heard, then please, please leave a review. It does really genuinely make a massive difference. And, we have had tens of thousands of downloads and not tens of thousands of reviews. So if you could just spend 2 minutes just literally scribbling out a quick review for us, it would make a massive difference, and ideally make it 5 stars for me. Of course, we've got the Facebook group, and we've got the website, and loads of information there as well. We will link to Unified Care Services through the show notes and also on the website as well, because there's some great opportunities there. So if you like what you heard, as I say, please leave a review. And otherwise, I shall catch up with you in a week's time. All right, speak to you soon. Take care. Bye for now.